For January the 28th, 2022, we talk about Rainbow Six Extraction, Vampire Survivors, and Pistol Whip. Welcome to Level 401. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Gonna let you know right away if we sound a little bit different. It's because we're trying out something new on the back end for recording. I am recording this as a disclaimer in case it sounds worse. The hope is that it will sound better. But we're so happy to have you back. 401, yeah. we're working on the second half of The Level, guys.
Yeah, I was going to say that's the reason we sound different is we've reached a new level of maturity and we just, it shows.
Yeah. So this
isn't really a visual thing, but all of our names are different shapes, which I think is kind of weird because there's not like a lot of... The number of sides is different based on when we joined, which is interesting.
Also, I said this is David Meismith, but I'm pretty sure this says that I am Sir E-Peep.
Yes.
Was that your name during the roleplay during Duckstream?
Yeah, during the kobolds, yeah.
Gotcha. I thought that it seemed familiar. So we're having tons of fun over here.
New technology.
Yeah. I'm always mortified asking you guys to do something different. It's like I just want it to be as easy as possible, please. No.
Man, that shows your opinion of our tech literacy. Thanks.
Yeah. No, it's not tech literacy. It's just I feel like I am making an imposition by saying log in over here as opposed to over here this time. And that's more about
my
own insecurity.
No one expects the podcast imposition.
Nope. No, they don't. I got something cool.
Just what do you got?
For non-video game things. I'll just take this here. I technically attended Sundance this past weekend.
Whoa!
Did I go to Utah? No. It was more I bought a ticket and then I streamed a movie. But I watched a premiere of a film by my favorite directing team, by my favorite directors.
I bought a Sundance NFT.
God no. I would be very disappointed if these guys did NFTs. No, they premiered it and I watched it and it was real good. It's a movie called Something in the Dirt. It's by Aaron Moorhead and Justin Benson, the directors of The Endless, of Spring, of Resolution. Real kind of like a low budget indie horror movie directors. And man, it was real good. And it was like super, super neat to buy the ticket and watch the stream of the movie and see the introduction and all that kind of stuff. It was pretty cool. So
did they do any like Q&A or anything afterwards, or do they not do that?
There was a live Q&A a little bit after it, but I did not attend to do that. Would have been neat, but I just was not able to. But watch for this movie to hit streaming because it's real good. It's called Something in the Dirt.
Nice.
Yeah, well, unqualified good thing that the pandemic has pushed us into is better access online.
Yeah,
for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, so rather than waiting for it to wind its way through distribution, I just got to see it for the first time with everybody, which was nice. So big thumbs up.
What would the Cole back of the box quote be?
I would say probably the best adaptation of House of Leaves we're apt to get, but it's also really funny. You know.
All right.
Yeah, it's kind of a movie about like conspiracy theory, like online, do your own research, radicalization. You know, we're gonna try and make a living off of this wild thing that we saw, kind of deal. It's hard to go into it with more than that, but it is definitely playing with the form of an indie movie and a documentary kind of feel.
Nice,
sweet,
yeah. And,
as a side note, it's a bummer that the expression "do your own research" has like a negative connotation now, where it's like,
yeah,
the spirit of that's a good idea. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. learn more.
Yeah, no, and now it just kind of means go to the same poison well that I went to. Yeah,
pick your opinion.
Problem is that people are stupid.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, but yeah, I don't know if this is going to come out. So something that is cool and true about these directors' movies is that they all take place kind of in a shared universe. So if you're
a big commitment, man.
So it's also not entirely necessary to have seen them, but like, you know, that meme of Leonardo DiCaprio pointing and laughing at the screen, you know. Like it just, mm-hmm. hey, I recognize that. I was doing that for all the little like grace note kind of things. So I will say, like, you can watch any of them in any order. Like, you're not going to be locked out, but having seen all of them will make it much more enjoyable for you, I think. Which is my way of saying
Marvel movied it.
Kinda.
The Marvel verse. Would you say indie horror
is? Is this more true of this one, or is that true of pretty much any of them?
This one is more. This one is more explicitly linked than at least two of the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I guess I would say, if you're gonna watch this one, I would say watch Resolution and The Endless. But I would say watch Resolution and The Endless anyway. I give them my highest recommendations. They're super good.
Nice.
Yeah,
they're accruing value as well. It's now more fun to watch them with the references in another movie than it was before.
Yeah, and it's weird because I feel like I am part of a like an exclusive little club that is being pandered to.
Also, it's very important to watch them in that order, because if you watch The Endless first, you'll never get to the Resolution.
Get out.
Oh man, I would recommend watching Resolution before Endless, but you know, you can watch The Endless before Resolution. It kind of doesn't matter. Yeah,
honestly, like, if you're gonna pick a tiny niche to pander to, people who are already into our stuff is a pretty good one.
Yeah. So but yeah, if you want to watch funny, unnerving horror movies that have like a real like sense of heart to them, these guys are a way to go. That is my recommendation for y'all.
Very cool.
Yeah. Let's see, Dennis, what's going on?
Oh man, I think this is my first time recording in the basement. Finished.
Nice.
So moved all my gear down here. I'm sure of it now, because last week I talked about the Steam Link, right?
Yes.
And so I have since moved my PC downstairs. And the project is complete, and so if I sound different, not only is it our new podcasting tool, but it is my new location, which I'm recording sitting inches from my pinball table, and I hope that I remember to hit mute when I eventually give in to temptation, inevitably.
It would be funny once and for like 10 seconds.
No, I got a run going, guys. I can't touch the mute button. Wait till I
we'll have
out.
To start making him record with the camera on then.
Yeah. Which is a new feature of what we got, which I guess was nice. In the old one too. But anyway, yeah, it's a great space. We're enjoying the hell out of it. I feel like I've been using this podcast to vent about the project for the past literally 4 months. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to be on the tail end of that, and has enabled some cool stuff that I will talk about on the show.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Cool. David, how about you?
Not too much. Just kind of keeping on.
Oh, okay. Usually you're bobbing and weaving, and
I know,
so this is a change.
Well, I'm keeping on bobbing and weaving.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
You know, it's just continue, Bob.
You understand you're never allowed to not say that now, right?
Like, oh, yeah, no.
That's the prison you have created for yourself.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is what we all create our own prisons.
Yeah. prisons of routine.
Exactly. It's too cold here, by which I mean it's probably not nearly as cold as where any of you guys are, but still, I despise the cold.
It's like 50 you know? Degrees or something.
Yeah,
but you're making a cloak. Like, this yeah. is getting the most mileage out of your cloak.
Yeah, the cloak is almost done. Just need to sew along the bottom and just basically hem it.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. If you mess it up, does that count as hawing it?
Yeah, yeah. You don't want you only hem, don't hem and haw.
Right, right. You don't hem when you should have hawed specifically. Yeah.
You can bob and weave, but you can't hem and haw.
Yeah. God. That took several seconds to register.
Well, because it wasn't very good.
No. I go the opposite direction. That was wonderful.
Man.
Mad I didn't think of it.
Ben, and how about you?
I've been doing pretty good. You jogged my memory of thinking of movies. So I watched the movie Titane over the weekend, which is like a French movie that came out this past year. It's like super weird. Don't necessarily recommend it, but it's super weird. So if you want to watch a super weird movie, you can watch that.
Oddly, nice. It's spelled the same as Titanic, but because it's French, you say it Titane.
Yeah.
Possibly. I feel, and then I watched a little bit of a Tarkovsky movie, and so I feel like these are like the highest levels of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs is like watching French or Russian cinema. It's like
it's a flex. It's a flex. Which Tarkovsky movie did you watch?
I watched some of Nostalgia. I watched Hilarious like a couple weeks ago, and
yeah,
it's an interesting. His style is very interesting, where it's like his average cut is like a minute long in all of his movies.
Yeah.
So you. Definitely slows down the pacing of what one might be used to.
if you start solving for that or optimizing for shot length, you start getting into like Bellatar as another director, as a Hungarian director who like just he did a version of Macbeth where the average shot length was like 53 minutes.
Jesus. Oh my god!
Yeah.
Please tell me like there was one shot and a half of them. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure we call that a play.
kinda is what that is. His most famous movie, Satan Tango, opens up with like a 12-minute shot of some cows wandering through a field.
Which I think actually I've heard serves of this. As
a yeah, it's a good book okay. too. It's also an 8-hour-long movie.
My reaction to it's an 8-hour-long movie is what I imagine your average person's reaction when is when I'm like, oh yeah, I want to play this game that takes us all day.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean my reaction, at least how I've watched it, has been, you know, oh, so that's 4 2-hour movies, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But Nostalgia, that's the one that's referenced in some of the secret stuff in The Witness, right?
That's correct. Yep.
Yeah, where the guys trying to get the candle across the church.
Yep.
What am I spoiling? Is that bad? You sound uncomfortable.
I don't know. I've seen that scene, but I haven't seen the rest of the movie, so
gotcha. But, gotcha.
Yeah, that is no, I was saying yep because it's a very it is a long scene, even for Tarkovsky, mm-hmm. and so that's saying something.
So. Yeah, I've never seen that. The only Tarkovsky I've seen is Stalker and Solaris.
Mm-hmm.
Stalker, as pretty as it is, I would just rather read the script, actually, because it is mostly just monologues about faith. Is really
the game was better.
I mean, I like the book better than the movie, better than the game, let's say.
Ah.
Ah. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Nice.
It's Tarkovsky's hierarchy of works.
Yep. Something like that. Cool. Well, I think that we should talk about video games. And to do that, we need to do the regular kind of show, what with the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And why don't we get started with...
The grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Let's see here, Dennis, you alluded to things you can do in your
finish
basements.
That sentence without making it weird.
No, things you can do in your basement that you don't want to do in the light of day, where God can see you.
Yeah. Things you can do in your basement for 500.
Yeah. Suck it, Trebek, is the top answer. Which I think I just blended in Family Feud there. So, So, I might have mentioned before, we set it up to have wiring basically behind the drywall and to the other side of the room, so that when I brought my PC down here, I can also just put it straight into the television. Which isn't, you know, that's nothing crazy. We had that in where it was before. It was just kind of along the floor, because I'm a Philistine. That setup prompted me to go, all right, it's time. I am going to get Xbox Game Pass.
Okay.
And specifically, I got it at the level where you have xCloud Gaming. And because my PC has just been, well, there's a couple factors. One, you know, new locale, and I can now stream games to this giant new TV. Mm-hmm. Two, there are several games that have come out recently that it's like, you need a GTX 960, and I've got a 950. I think that was Halo, and I got 15 frames per second. That was, what was the other one? I think Extraction, Rainbow Six Extraction was that. And that was the game I wanted to play. And it was a day and date free option on Xbox Game Pass and on xCloud. So that those combinations of things got me on the Game Pass train. I have caved. I am now a Game Pass subscriber.
I mean, caved is a weird way to say it. I have not seen a better value for the money.
Yeah, caved isn't got into this objectively good service.
Yeah, to the point where it feels a little bit like MoviePass, where something about this is unsustainable and the whole house of cards is going to come a tumbling down at some point.
So what I'm hearing Microsoft, is that you now support Activision Blizzard.
No. them's fighting words.
Yeah, what I was about to say is it means that I now see the Xbox logo on my PC. And as a lifetime PlayStation fanboy, that just it feels dirty to me. But guys, the games are so good, and there are so many of them. I want to talk about Rainbow Six Extraction, which completely fallen off my radar. I think they showed a trailer for it 2 years ago, before even the pandemic, maybe? Because it was called Rainbow Six Quarantine originally.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say it had a bad title.
Yes, it did. And the trailer was just like cinematic. Like there was no gameplay shown. And then I forgot this existed until it was like, whoop, here it is. Enjoy. And this game is dope as hell. Like I absolutely love it. It's a co-op shooter that manages to slow the pace all the way down from what you're used to in a Left 4 Dead or Vermintide, like I've been playing, or any of those, any like co-op shooter type of games just tend to lean into frantic so hard, right? Because you're with friends, you want to have a good time, and everyone's just kind of charging ahead. And that most games just accept that and build around that. In Rainbow Six Extraction, if you YOLO, you die. Like, Leroy Jenkins would not make it very long in this game.
This is a bit of a return to form for them. They had been pretty high pace for a while. I know that, what was it, their weird little home invasion SWAT game, like that. Like, I know that was pretty fast paced.
Siege?
So, Siege.
Yeah, there we go. But just like when I think about Rainbow Six in my head, I'm going back to, you know, I associated with the earliest days on like PC and Dreamcast, where like you didn't start just dropping in with a gun. You actually like planned out a mission and sent a squad to a place.
Oh, I spent so much time on that screen.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was where it was at. In fact, when I played that game on PC, so the first one I had was Rainbow Six with the expansion Urban Ops. I think it was all the way back to the first one, was that, and, I played it with like the auto target on. So anytime my mouse was anywhere near someone's head, it would just snap to their skull. So every shot was a headshot. Because all I cared about was that planning and orchestrating everything. So, that's very much where my heart lies with the Rainbow Six series. And I think games in general, like I like XCOM. This is that kind of game. There's not quite a planning layer, but definitely. So the story is that you have these random you don't know what's. They call them like the archons. It's a word with one of those AE fused together things in it.
Oh, ligature. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an abomination that should not exist. But it, you know, you use it anytime you want to make something seem more other. OAETHER. and you know, these things have started showing up, of course, first in New York, because Ubisoft hates New York and wants to destroy it in as many ways as possible. But then around the country, and you are the team that is sent, not to eradicate the threat, because you can't, it's like, it's too widespread, but to like study and help get people out, the threat, to try to learn how to overcome it. So the premise is like a zombies, right? Like it is,
wow.
It is a premise that I think would fit very easily into a run and gun Left 4 Dead shooter. Basically what happens is every time you enter a level, you get three zones in a row, and each zone has a unique objective, which is randomly placed in the zone. And then your entrance is randomly placed. So it's fixed maps that you'll get to know very well. But what you're doing on them and where you're going in them is completely different time to time. And based on what those missions are, you might want to bring different gear or different operatives. Each operative has a special ability and different gear. And so all of that kind of melds together to a very, very much strategic thinking before you even start the level. But that's as far as it goes in terms of planning. You drop in. You try to complete the objective. That might be taking out a priority target. That might be, ferrying a canister from one side of the level to the other. It might be just scanning a certain amount of nodes. There's a huge variety of mission. And then you have two options. You can either go to the extraction point and helicopter out of there and be done, or you can go to the airlock and go through to the next area. Second area is harder than the first. Third area is harder than the second. But obviously, you know, rewards and XP are better. Yeah. And within it, like, you know, it is very tense, tactical, you know, clear the room, check your corners, scout ahead kind of gameplay. That, like you said, is a return to form for Rainbow Six. And man, that formula, just every single piece of it works incredibly well. I've been having a ton of fun with it.
I've also been picked up at Dennis's urging. We haven't had a chance to co-op yet, but you know,
David wants to do things like sleep.
yeah, you know, sleep tends to be important, because I am not you know, just whatever. But anyway,
just got shady over here.
Yeah, you know. But yeah, so. It is worth saying, this is basically, this is to Rainbow Six Siege as Blood Dragon is to Far Cry, what was that, 4? 3?
3. Mm-hmm. 3.
Yeah, so like, this is directly built on the bones of Rainbow Six Siege, and like, all of the characters from that game, that sort of thing.
Right.
But thematically, it's off the rails, though.
Yeah, very much so. Like, it is alien zombie kind of things that glow when you put a black light on them, that come out of nodes that look like Satan's sphincter. It's really got that gross zombie vibe to it.
Yeah, because this actually originally was a event in Rainbow Six Siege that they had. Yeah, so I think this was originally them trying to do like a zombie mode event.
Yeah,
and then they kind of extend it to that. So you'll hear in like some of the backstory stuff sometimes them referencing a previous event. That's what they're talking about.
Okay. Oh, interesting. That would require me to pay any attention to the story, which I absolutely have not.
It's actually fairly good. There's a lot of voiceover, you know, cutscenes, stuff like that, which is a lot of fun.
It's the AAA treatment for sure.
Yeah, and a lot of technobabble. I think my favorite is that the fact that there's actually if you go into a mission solo, there is a cutscene that is them discussing whether they should approve solo missions and then ultimately doing so.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Uh-huh. I've gone in solo, and I don't remember the cutscene, but I also could have just mashed my way past it without realizing.
Sure. They also have, you know, it's not a Rainbow Six game without, like, ludicrous technology that they try to make realistic. So I love the super advanced VR system they have.
Yeah. For training.
What does that do?
So, like, the way they do the tutorials is like, oh, this is, you know, VR training. But then they depict it as, like, you know those toys that are, like, a bunch of pins in kind of in, like, a plate, and they do an imprint of your hand or whatever? They basically depict the floor as being that, so that it can, like, shoot up and create, like, terrain for you to vault over and stuff.
Yeah, it's stylish. Like, they could have just said, you're in VR training and been done with it, but they, like, spent 15 minutes of cutscenes showing off this entire VR system that they invented to justify the fact that there's a tutorial.
That that seems like a very poor use of resources to me.
Yeah, it's definitely a AAA studio move.
And but I mean, it is a very Rainbow Six, Tom Clancy game.
Sure.
Use of resources.
So this is a question I think maybe for David, because it sounds like you've played Siege. It like, is this actually like slower paced and more deliberate than Siege was? Because my impression of Siege was that it was a, you know, kind of more akin to a Twitch shooter, like a Counter-Strike kind of deal. But it seems incongruous that this would be based on the game and it would add wacky alien zombies, but also be like more deliberate than the grounded base game version of it.
So I have not played Siege. I have like watched, you know, let's plays, or I don't know, not let's plays, but you know what I mean, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think the thing is that Siege has a explicit like pre-match segment and then the actual match segment. So at first it's just either one side or the other is active. And they can go up and, like, barricade things, lay out traps, attempt to, like, send in drones to find out what classes the other team is playing, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in this mode, you know, it's just one thing. However, the enemies are basically... it's kind of like they're almost like they're slow zombies until they see you, and then they transition into fast zombies.
Okay.
So, like, they're initially just kind of wandering around aimlessly, have almost no peripheral vision, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would say it's more of a thing where, like, the actual moment-to-moment gameplay once a fight starts is very fast-paced. But a lot of the game is making sure you don't start a fight too soon.
Yeah, that's well said. If you're in an extended firefight, it is frantic, but that means you've done something very, very wrong.
Nice.
And you probably will die because this game is really, really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a really interesting system for operatives and health that... It strikes a really nice medium between permadeath and no consequences for failure. So you've got a roster of different characters. You choose one to go into the mission with. That person can get injured and probably will. I have yet to come out of a mission completely unscathed. But depending on how injured that person gets, either they you know will have lower health if you take them immediately into another mission. Or they're injured to the point that you just can't use them again and their health bar is very low. Every operative that you don't take gains an amount of rest back, so gains health back. And that is based on how much XP you earn with the operative that you use. So kind of one person is healing up everyone else depending on how well they do. If you actually die during a mission, you foam. So there's protective, again, Tom Clancy over explanation. There's protective stasis foam that envelops you, And then that person, that operative, is trapped in the level, and you have to run a mission with someone else to retrieve that person to use them again.
Okay.
But that makes it feel like failing or dying has real consequences, because like you lose that person's kit for, you know, however many missions to retrieve them and then get them back to health if you're not willing to take them out injured. And so that just actually, you know, ratchet up. Oh, go ahead.
That sounds like a good workaround for like XCOM, where it's like with permadeath, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it also forces you to play different characters, which is nice.
Yeah, that is. Yeah. There are people that I would never in a million years touch, but I all my other people are hurt or MIA. So that is definitely adds variety.
I mean, this is making it sound like Darkest Dungeon.
Yeah, like, yeah. Actually,
just by the natural rotation, you end up like kind of developing a natural A squad and B squad because you're always cycling through. Yeah.
In Darkest Dungeon, I was actively killing my low-level people.
I'm not to that point yet. And the first question everyone asks, or at least that I asked and the buddies I've played with have asked, is like, what happens if you get every operative MIA? You really have to try to make that happen, because after a bit of failure, the mission to retrieve your MIA person is fairly easy. It's always in the first room. But...
Oh, no, I was just laughing at, like, the game takes pity upon you.
Yes, yes. But yeah, so I don't know how bad that is, but it really is Darkest Dungeon in terms of like, I would like to have person A, but they're hurt, so I guess I'll take person B. And, you know, add it in with something that Darkest Dungeon doesn't have, which is, oh, you know, person A is really good at, you know, scouting heavy missions. And so while normally my second choice would be person B, because it's a scouting mission, I probably need to go to person D. It causes you to mix it up that much more. Mm-hmm. And again, it's this added tension of, you know, at two different points throughout the overarching mission, you can just nope out. You know, there's no penalty other than you just don't get the XP from the next area. There's, you know, no shame in it. You can just leave. And so there's really, I am on the MIA treadmill right now. Because I, you know, I'll go on a mission to get an MIA person back is my main thing. It's in the first room, retrieve them, no problem. And I'm like, dude, I'm doing great. I should go to the second room instead of just leaving with my squad intact. And then I die in the second room or die in the third room. and then I've got another MIA mission to do.
So I don't know, how much, if you've experienced this, if you're primarily playing solo right now, but one of the other kind of interesting consequences of this is that if you do get killed and you're in a multiplayer game, your teammates basically have to cart your body out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they pick up your body and take it to the extraction zone, you will not go MIA. But that basically then becomes the objective of the map. And there are, like I said, this game is really hard. There are, honestly, as many missions as not, where somebody goes down and then, you know, everything's going to shit around you and you're just trying to get everyone to the exit. And it's hectic and fun and really, really different than anything I've seen in this kind of co-op shooter space.
Have you have you gotten the mission to capture one of the alien things yet?
That's the last mission that killed me. So I'm a little salty about that mission right now. Or wait, so, capture as in stab, or capture as in lure to the pad?
Lure to the pad.
Yes, I've gotten that one. That one's pretty breezy, at least in my experience.
So I just love that because this mission is basically like, fuck the entire point of this game. Because instead of being stealthy, what you do is basically piss off a specific enemy and then run as fast as you can to the exit. And like there's like a trap pad and you have to activate it, and when they walk over it they get caught.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the exact opposite of what is the optimal strategy for the rest of the game.
Yeah, there's a couple missions that do that. I think of they call them the abhorrent nests or something, but there's like a mission where you've got to destroy the several different egg nests. And the second you destroy the first one, just all hell breaks loose around you. And it's very high octane. Like the second you go loud, you're just scrambling to destroy these things as fast as possible. Stealth be damned. So the mission variety is really good at mixing it up. And I know that I have not seen all the mission types or even the enemy types yet, which is exciting. It's going to get real interesting as you get further and further in the game, I'm sure. What city are you in right now, David?
I've just been messing around with New York.
Mm-hmm. Same. I've unlocked the second city, San Francisco, but there's so much that I'm still figuring out that I just New York has more than enough. We've been going on about it, but the last thing I wanted to talk about that I thought was really interesting was the way the game handles monster closets. So there are those nests that I mentioned that are typically dormant and they don't respond to anything. You know, they're not making enemies. However, if an enemy in the level sees you, the first thing they do is like howl or erupt. That alerts all the nests in a proximity to them. And then those nests start making enemies, and they'll continue to churn out enemies that have aggro until all the nests are destroyed. And of course, it's a real daisy chain of like, okay, I alerted one enemy instead of nests, and because things got frantic trying to shut down all of that, I alerted more, and then I gotta go over there and shut those down, and you know, it can kind of chain into craziness real quickly. But the tension of sneaking around the level and trying to destroy as many of these nests as possible before they're activated is just really, really good. And it creates the incentive for being stealthy and secretive. Like the most missions, at some point you're going to go loud. There are some where you never have to break stealth, and that's great. But you can spend easily 10 minutes in a level just prepping and destroying nests and getting everything perfectly set up, barricading doors before you go loud, and then finish the mission in seconds. And that's as satisfying as getting into a huge firefight where you're testing your Twitch reflexes.
Nice. I mean, the amount of variety in this, it sounds really good, and it sounds like you're making really conscious decisions about how to engage. Like this... that sounds much more interesting to me than just a regular, you know, Counter-Strike style clear the map kind of deal. Yeah,
I like this game a lot.
The one thing that really disappoints me is I think my favorite character from Siege is probably never going to make in there, because she's one of the South Korean operatives, and her special ability in the game is to basically make the enemy operative cell phones go off.
Okay.
And so, you know, they'll be like camping somewhere, and all of a sudden, you know, their phone will start ringing, and they have to like grab it real quick and like silence it. But then, you know where they're at.
So and, unprofessional. Like,
that's such a cool ability, and like one of the best parts of Siege and now this game is the variety of the characters. Unfortunately, that one I don't think makes much sense with space aliens or whatever the hell these are.
Space aliens have cell phones too. Oh man. But yeah, that is Rainbow Six Extraction.
Nice.
Bringing it all the way back around as a reflection on xCloud. Huge praise. I have never for a second noticed lag or felt like I was playing on a streaming service. It felt so fast, so smooth. And I love that as someone with a bit of an underpowered computer, I can boot up this just released game in high def on my new TV, feel like I'm getting the full experience, and never have to wait a second for a download or anything like that. Like, cloud gaming is so cool, guys, when it works.
That's compare this to Google Stadia, because I know that you did Doom 2016 on that. You've done like PS Now. Like you've been dabbling in this kind of thing for a while. Like, is this the best one?
This one is by far the best one. PS Now, you know, was not competitive. could not play a game that required timing on it. Which poor Sony with everything Microsoft is doing. Stadia was very competent, one or two hitches, but overall, like, it did not detract from the experience at all. This one, and maybe I just need to play on a bad day for networks, but it has been flawless, and that's really cool. Downside is that technically all these games are streaming from an Xbox Series S, and unless it's built into the game, it does not support mouse and keyboard. So I'm playing this with a controller, like an animal. Yes. And it's been a great time despite that, but man, I wish that I could have mouse and keyboard. And shame on Ubisoft for this. I was Googling trying to figure out how I could make mouse and keyboard work. I turned up that they had promised that this game was going to support it, and then just did not do that. So the community seems to be fairly vocal about it. Like, there's a lot of people on the forums and stuff asking about it. I hope it's high on their priority list of things to add. But the fact that they talked about it and then it didn't happen tells me that there was something that made it, hard or impossible, or I don't know what. I can't imagine that it's impossible. But I, you know, the fact that it didn't happen immediately makes me worried about how hard it is to do for them. But I would love to be using mouse and keyboard.
Yeah.
Yeah. I find at least, being able to get headshots are very, very key. Especially since, there's a window where an enemy sees you, but hasn't alerted anything yet. If you can, you know, get a silenced headshot, that, you know, basically resets everything.
Mm. Yeah, which, I mean, those are the best oh shit moments in gaming. Like, the adrenaline of realizing an enemy is about to howl and popping them before they can is just, it's crack.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one other thing that actually I mean to mention whenever I play an Ubisoft game, I always forget. I think they really deserve some kudos for just how crazy their accessibility options are. They've got significant options for different colorblind modes, you know, changing up the HUD and just all sorts of things. The one I noticed from this that I think's a new one, because I haven't seen it in previous games, is they have a sound indicator mode. So it'll you know how there's kind of the peripheral indicators where you when you get shot in a first person shooter?
Like, it's like in the original Half-Life, you get the little red arrow saying like, hey, you're taking damage from the right.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's basically like that, except it's what you're hearing. So if, if like an enemy's walking around, it'll be like a little footstep icon to that side, or like, you know, a gunfire icon, that sort of thing.
Oh, nice.
So it's, yeah. So, I mean, and this is, because, you know, Ubisoft's monolithic, all of their games, you know, any of these features are apparently a part of whatever, I don't know, developer kit or whatever they've built in-house. Because all of the Far Cry games and Watch Dogs and stuff like that all have them, which is really nice.
Badass.
Wow. I've been playing with that sound sensor on, and I can't imagine playing without it.
I mean, it kind of just seems like a reasonable extension of captioning.
Exactly.
The other thing that's kind of cool, and I don't know how much this was intentional, but I'm going to say designed. I don't know if they meant it, but it looks like it was designed to look like it's one of the like over the top Rainbow Six technologies you might have. You know, like, especially if you've played The Division, which, you know, they all their games kind of have this pseudo shared universe. It looks a lot like what the augmented reality system from The Division looks like. So at least to me, there's much less I don't know, like breaking the immersion with how it's designed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, you would have thought the chief design goal of this game was don't break immersion.
Right, yeah.
Which, who knows? I mean, that's a very interesting thing. Like, hey, we're going to throw a bunch of space alien zombies into this, but we don't want to break immersion. Go.
Right, exactly.
And that resulted in a really good and interesting game.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Did you have anything else besides that, Dennis?
I do. So I also started playing, because of this glut of new games I've got, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order.
Oh, yeah, nice. The Star Wars Souls-like.
Yeah, I'm officially going to dub it Dark Side Souls. And if no one's made that joke before, then I will eat my hat. But really solid adventure game. On the opposite side of the spectrum from Extraction in terms of this is meant to be played with a controller. And so there's nothing lost in streaming this over xCloud. And I am three planets in, so think of it like three areas, in Dark Souls.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really well done. It's slightly more action-y, but the formula is very much there. You've got your Estus flasks, you've got your bonfires, and all that stuff. In fact, I realize as I'm saying this that I'm not sure if you guys have covered this for Bonfireside Chat or not.
No, we have not. It's been like just kind of like constantly dangling on the edge of us doing it. We just have not had a time where like the appetite and the time available has matched up. I dig it though. It's really neat. It has one of my like its 3D map is kind of up there with the Doom 2016 3D map as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very well done.
Yeah, which is a great thing to have in a Souls-like.
Excellent use of color coding on the map, and just like you press a button and without putting a big arrow or line on your screen as you're playing, you can very easily figure out where you're supposed to go, and I appreciate that because there's a lot of traversal puzzles. This game is almost like a half step from Dark Souls towards Uncharted in terms of the way you're moving around and how acrobatic everything is and the amount of puzzle sections. But I very much appreciate that. The story has been solid so far. The thing that I love about the combat is their use of trivial enemies. You're a Jedi in this and you're wielding a lightsaber and you actually feel like you're wielding a lightsaber in this game. Where, a lot of enemies die in one hit. And the enemies that you're fighting, you're not dealing damage to them. You are, there's a meter for it, lowering their guard stamina, to a point where you break them and then you kill them very quickly. And I appreciate that, having played a lot of Star Wars games and had a lot of times where I'm like, well, I'll just hack away at this with my lightsaber for 3 minutes.
There should not be a damage sponge when a lightsaber's in play.
Very true. Yes.
Yeah.
So this game gets that right. It's also nice, there's lots of stormtroopers that will start firing at you, and it's very easy. The parry window is pretty wide to reflect blaster fire back at them. And nothing is more satisfying than just, doing that and like, get out of here, peon.
One of the coolest things a Jedi can do.
And it's just the right balance of like all those enemies, the stormtroopers, the little scrub animals that'll try to attack you. They are trivial until you're in the middle of a fight and they're on the fringes and they're not, and suddenly that blaster fire is really hard to deal with when there's two other dudes attacking you from close range, or, that rat that circled around to be just off screen is suddenly, has you in a hold while everyone else pounces on you. Like, that feeling that everything can be lethal is captured really well in this game. And I enjoy that.
Yeah.
It's a great Star Wars fantasy. I've been kind of playing it with the I want to live a blockbuster approach rather than the I want to explore every nook and corner approach. And I feel like it served me well on that front.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the boss difficulty?
The two things that I would call bosses in that there was a health bar separate from the person up on the screen. One was really difficult and was right at the beginning of the game, or of the area, yep. first area. So I think it was probably one of those, like, hey, you should come back, but I muscled my way through it. The second one was at the end of the second planet, and was trivial. Like, I cut through it really easily. So I've seen both ends of the spectrum. I'll be interested as I get to more how the average continues to evolve.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, you got any warnings or cautions for me on that front?
Well, I don't know if I'm the most Souls-like person, so it's like I faced the first boss and I was like, all right, I'm going to change the difficulty. Like, I'm not trying to...
Fair enough.
And... Yeah, I don't think any reasonable person would say, no, you shouldn't be able to do that.
Yep.
That discourse is about to start up again because of Elden Ring, you know, the whole difficulty kind of thing. Just we just everything is just a big cycle. It's the discourse cycle. So we're about to come around to that. just gonna get out in front of this one and say it's good that you can do that in Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. That game has too many titles, it should be able to do it in more games than those. So.
Mm-hmm. But agree. Not in Dark Souls games.
You should. You should be able to. Maybe especially. I'm going to say only in Dark Souls games.
In fact, you should have to play in story mode.
They've patented it with that one company, Capcom, and loading screen games. All right, I got one nit to pick on Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order beyond the title. And then I've said my piece. There's a scan mechanic where when you defeat a new enemy, you can scan them, or generally, like, if you walk past something interesting in a level, you can scan it. And your little droid that follows you around, will kind of hop off your shoulder and run over to whatever it wants to scan to indicate that that's there. It is a terrible, terrible, finicky mechanic, that has enraged me on so many occasions. Because if you do not hold exactly still from your killing blow, the scan icon will disappear.
Oh, no.
Then you're like shifting around trying to, like, okay, wait, I gotta find that. Do I look at it? Do I stand facing it? Like, how do I get that the button back? And it won't show back up, or it'll show back up so quickly and then disappear again, because the game assumes that you just would not want to scan the enemy if you did not do it within microseconds of killing them. And then the enemy freaking despawns. And for a next generation game, there is no reason you need to get that spider off the screen so quickly. It is criminal. No. And then the other thing is for the object scanning, like I said, the droid hops off and runs to something interesting, but the droid also serves as kind of your HUD. Like, they're always on your shoulder and they kind of disappear. And to some extent, like a good HUD, they're designed not to be super noticeable. Which means when they're suddenly not there, it's not super noticeable. And so there are so many times where I have realized there was a point of interest because the droid runs back to me. And I'm like, oh, wait, okay, I passed something and I got far enough away that the droid, you know, assumed I didn't want to see it. Now I got to go back and wander around trying to get him to hop off my damn shoulder again to scan whatever the hell it was to get my codex entry. Because I'm OCD and can't control myself.
Right.
Okay, that was nice to have that off my chest. Yeah, that is bewildering that it's that bad.
There's no reason why you shouldn't just have it scan. If there's a scannable, have it scan automatically, and it's added into your codex or whatever. Like, you know,
and there's no reason scanning should take time either, unless like that is. A factor in the gameplay. There's so many games where you gotta like hold a button to scan.
Yeah,
that's dumb.
Yeah.
Instant information, please.
I don't care for that one, but
yeah,
it could be.
Apart from that, it's a great Star Wars Souls extension.
Nice.
Also, the poncho game is on point.
Yeah,
I'm waiting until I can get a cloak, man.
David, did you have anything besides Rainbow Six Extraction?
Not a ton. I'm trying to think. So the idle game I'm playing, one character mechanic that I kind of like that just wanted to bring up. I got a character who's a dark elf, I think like wizard or something, and he has a I don't know, a genie or djinn or whatever servant. And so in this idle game, his special ability is that when a character dies, every 60 seconds he will he can revive a character.
Okay.
And then they're invulnerable for like 10 seconds and then provide a percentage damage boost. So like it starts out at like 100 and, you know, increases as you level this character to the entire team. But it lasts until they die again. So then the optimal strategy is basically to switch out and one by one get every character in your party to die one at a time so that you have this buff. And the buff, you know, is multiplicative with itself. So it's, you know, that's the intended, you know, way of using the character. You know, the point of this game is to basically find ways to break the system. I recently got to the highest total DPS I've ever gotten in the game, which was a one with 74 zeros after it.
Oh my god. This is Idle Champions of the Forgotten Realms?
Correct, yes. Sorry.
Okay. I just wanted to make it clear in case anybody hadn't heard the previous episodes.
So you
reached, you're headed toward Googleplex then.
Headed towards, at some point, numbers stop meaning anything.
I mean, at some point in the future, or this happened sometime in the past?
Maybe some of both.
Nice.
They have stopped meaning anything, and they continually mean less.
Yeah. And I'm getting to the point where it's getting difficult enough that the strategy becomes much more important, which is really interesting because, because of, everything, including your experience points you're getting increasing exponentially, that creates a system where basically at any point in the game, the experience needed to that you've spent getting up to every level except your most recent one is completely trivial,
right?
By the point where you get there, so that creates a thing where, like, you know, you can basically say, all right, I need to change up my strategy, swap out a character, get one kill, and have them be, you know, like one level below whatever the character you swapped out from was.
Okay.
So, you know, it's very, very user friendly for trying different things to, you know, push your way through the levels.
Nice.
Yep. I think that's all I have. I'm still playing Far Cry 6. But, you know, not anything super notable. It just, you know, continues to be fun.
Nice. Ben, how about you?
I think David has one other thing that he maybe has played that I started playing, which is...
Oh, well, yes.
Vampire Survivors. Upon his recommendation last week, I started playing that. That's the early access game that I think streamers are playing on Twitch, where it's like a roguelike inspired by Castlevania type weapons, kind of like waves where you see how long you can last sort of thing. And it's $3.
Yeah.
So it's like a SNKRX and a Castlevania theme, but it's not done yet. And that's kind of what I found to be true after playing it a couple days. It's good. It's like it has like a nice addictive quality to it. The idea is like when you kill most enemies, they drop experience. When you get a certain amount of experience, you choose a perk. Perks can stack. I think it depends on what the perk is, but the generic ones will stack 9 times. And then there's this like weird arithmetic right now where it's like if you get combinations of perks, then you can upgrade to like an overpowered version of whatever it is. So like an example I can give is like there's one where the perk is just you have a spinning book that spins around you and will damage enemies if it hits them. That's called like the Holy Book. As you pick up perks of it, it'll spawn more projectiles of it and it'll go faster, and the time that it takes to spawn in between will shorten. So like instead of it taking like 5 seconds before it'll respawn, it'll do it in like a single second or something like that. And then if you get an upgraded version of it, there's, you know, like 9 of these projectiles, they're always spinning and they never turn off sort of thing. And they turn a different color. So there's an interesting arithmetic because most of the things have that sort of thing where it pairs with another ability. And if you get the pair, then you get like this, this like kind of like busted combo or whatever. I don't think the game's like, obviously the game's in early access. You can get like a runaway run pretty easily, I guess. I think I did the first time I did it was like maybe on my 3rd or 4th run. And I've done it like, you know, a handful of times, like 6 to 12 times. And it gets to the point where it's like, once you get a combination where it kills people around you efficiently enough, like you're kind of impervious. There's like a couple combinations that'll do this. Like the one that I was just talking about is fine. Once you get that, like no one can really touch you. Like things are spinning too fast around you that they can't get in. There's another one where it's like it'll spawn zone, like safe zones around you that'll kill enemies. Like it's like holy water, so it'll like do like a splash of a circle and it'll kill enemies if they touch it, essentially. And with that, you're basically just walking from pool of holy water to pool of holy water. They just kind of like spawn in a circle. So you just walk around in a circle and you can't die. That is until, right now they have like basically like an abominable snowman from that skiing game in Windows from back in the 90s, which is Stadia.
Ski free. Yeah.
Yeah. And it kind of spawns randomly. I think it's when you kill enough things, cause it's not by level, cause it spawned when I was like been in the 80s or in the 90s.
It's at 30 minutes.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, gotcha. So that thing will spawn, it'll run towards you, it slows you down, and it kills you, like, very quickly, like, within, like, 1 or 2 seconds. I've seen a video on YouTube of someone beating it, so it's possible to kill it. But they did that by kind of like a little bit of a hack where there's like one weapon that just kills everything on screen, which by the way is like not a good weapon, or I don't think that's good game design in my opinion, but there's like a balance to it where it'll kill positive items as well, like chests and stuff that are out. I thought XP stayed in that it's just that the people that you kill don't drop XP, but any XP on the map I thought stayed. But I could be wrong on that. The point being is like there's a way around the abominable snowman type monster at the end, but it kind of points to the fact that there's kind of some pacing issues where once you get like a runaway run, you don't have to do anything. Like you're just sitting and watching the game until it gets to that point, and then you die, and there's not like really a way for you to kill the bad guy. So it's like that sort of thing needs to be hashed out a little bit. But again, it's early access, so it's kind of easy to forgive that. The other part that's interesting is like how you do upgrades on the metagame, like the rhythmic aspect, because basically when you do a run, you'll get a certain amount of gold, and then you can use that to unlock new characters or you can unlock abilities. So some of the meta abilities are like you get an extra projectile for anything that has projectiles. The cooldowns are decreased in time, so they're quicker. Stuff like that you can do on the meta. I haven't unlocked everything, but like I think I played it for a couple days and it was fun, but I think I might, you know, be good with it until they start adding more content to it.
That makes sense.
So is there a weapon that you strongly dislike that's like you're, you know, when it comes up in the queue you're like, oh, this is a waste?
Yeah, like the armor is like kind of useless. The increase of health, I think, is kind of useless. The magnetic ability can be nice, but it takes up a slot. So I think in that sense, you could probably better fill it with something else. Originally, I was down on the knife, the throwing knife, but the upgraded version of that is like awesome because it's like a death ray. So it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun to just be able to walk in a direction and know that you can safely just walk to the left because you're murdering everything that's to the left of you right now.
Right. I think that's one of only two weapons that you can somewhat aim.
Yeah, I think the whip is like another one.
In general,
I kind of like better the things that'll automatically attack and you don't have to pay attention to them. But, I would say for me, it's like the OP ones are like the Holy Book is a good one for defense to make sure you just don't take any damage. I'm trying to think. The upgraded axe is goofy. All the upgraded weapons are pretty interesting, I guess.
Yeah. Garlic is kind of a weird one because that one gives you a damage aura.
Yeah.
And it doesn't do that much damage, but in most of the waves, there'll either be a certain enemy type that's notably lower in HP than the others, or there will be waves that are just like massive numbers of weak, fast-moving enemies, and the game kind of shifts to being
like
your goal is to run into those enemies.
Yeah, yeah. And just farm the XP. Yep. Yeah, and that's interesting, too. There's two different maps. There's like a field that you start on, which I don't know if it's tiled or not, or like I don't know if it ever wraps around or not, but you can just go in any direction. It's just like this green field with like kind of road markings to tell where you are. And the second one is the library, where it's just a giant corridor, so it only goes to the left or the right. And that I don't even know if that one wraps in on itself or not. But it slightly changes like kind of how you deal with the enemies and how you like walk around them and burst through them and stuff like that. The library, I think, does a better job because there's like obstacles and stuff. There's like different there's like little nooks that you can go in where there's like books, and then there's like obstacles that are in the middle that you kind of have to throws a wrench in things, like if you're moving a certain way. That's a little bit more interesting. And then the library one has like a crazy mode or something like that, where it's like the speed increases and the enemies move faster, but you move faster, but it makes it harder overall, right? Because you have to respond faster. But then they increase the XP and gold you get from that. So it was a slightly interesting choice to make there. And there's different characters that have different perks, I think I already mentioned. One thing, this is kind of a funny small thing. One reason why... Well, I don't really pick garlic too often, but one thing I can't unsee that I saw someone comment on a stream was that the garlic looks like a pair of balls, and you can't.
Yeah.
It's really hard to unsee it after someone mentions that. So
that's definitely true.
I think that's all I have to say about the game. Do you have any other thoughts on it, David?
No, I'm really enjoying it. The one thing I wish I knew more of is I haven't played very many of the older Castlevania games. So I'm assuming the various characters are based on characters from those games, but they don't really mean anything to me.
Yeah, likewise. I'm kind of ignorant of that entire franchise, so...
That was going to be my question is like because I know David, at least you have played a lot of the portable ones,
right?
But Ben, I don't know that I'd ever really heard you talk about playing Castlevania.
I only am familiar with the slot machines.
Yes,
sad. All right. So I'm going to move on. There's two other things I want to talk about, and they're kind of like non-traditional entries, but here goes. I started playing Ring Fit, which I think I talked about this like maybe a year or two ago when I first got it.
Yeah, back toward the first few months of the pandemic.
Exactly. Yeah, it's kind of been too cold to get running, even though I kind of went today. And I don't know. Yeah, so sometimes it's like gloomy or rainy or something like that. So this has kind of been the standby for just doing something in the morning as a way to get some exercise in. It's been fun. The exercises get weirder, I think, the higher in level you get. So I'm at like level 30 now, and like, so for example, the arm strength like exercise is sticking your two hands in the air like a V and just rotating them back and forth, like rotating like the ring back and forth. And it's like, I guess this is building strength. It feels weird. Yeah, like before, like they had a bow and arrow one where you're like pulling on the ring that you have or whatever. And it's like, yeah, this feels like exercise. Whereas like this one, it's like, I don't know if they're joking on me right now or like seeing if people will do this.
Tiny little camera that sends it all back.
Yeah. And then there's another one that's called like hip shake, where you like hold your hands in the air and you literally just shake your hips back and forth for like, I don't know, 40 or 50 times. And again, it's like, this doesn't feel like an exercise, so I don't know if I'm being made fun of here or not. But there's some interesting ones. When you get far enough along, you unlock a heal mechanic, which is good, because you didn't have that before. So like basically, if you take enough damage, you just die in whatever level you're doing. So it's good that they have like a recovery mechanic. And that translates to some sort of, like, the first one was like a yoga one. The second one is like lifting your legs in the air and like scissoring them, for lack of a better word, like like widening them and then bringing them back or whatever. But since they're suspending you there, it like hurts your abs and stuff like that, whatever.
Left kind of deal. Yeah.
Anyway, the only thing I have to say about that game is like, it's kind of some weird, I guess like scaling or whatever, where it's like the last like two bosses I've gotten to haven't really been able to beat on the first try, and there's not really a hard strategy to this game. It's just you recover when your health is low and then you keep attacking. It's just been that I haven't been like high enough level, I guess. My attack and defense hasn't been high enough, so you kind of have to like backtrack and do some of the levels again just to farm XP so that you can beat it. So that's kind of like maybe some bad pacing there, because there's not like a way to
That's strange that the limitation is avatar strength and not player strength.
Yeah,
strength is a weird way to put it, but like the way it is challenging you is like you just do not have enough HP as a character.
Yeah. So they do a little bit with like how strong you are. Basically, every exercise has like a two level system where it's like if you do the base exercise, you get a base amount of damage. If you do it quote unquote like hard, then you get like extra damage. But I think you're always supposed to be doing like the hard, you know what I mean? Like it's just so like for example, doing a squat, like, you know, until you squat like all the way down, you won't get like the actual damage of the attack or whatever.
Right.
I wonder if the avatar strength is a way of, like, the developer knows that gamers are just going to try to optimize and cheat the system any way they can. So it's like, let's at least make them do it a couple times to be sure they're getting some kind of workout, even if they are trying to cheat out of it.
Maybe, and I suppose I could probably be doing some things better. Like, for example, there's, like, items that can restore health, but I'm just, like, ignoring those completely, so probably could do that or something to try and do it. But, anyway. Don't have too much more to say about that. Any other questions about Ring Fit?
I'm glad it didn't go into a closet never to be seen again.
It's like a nice like way to work out for like 10 to 20 minutes or so, and it's like good about being like, hey, maybe you should chill out and just come back tomorrow. It's like, oh, okay, thanks. Anyway, the last thing I want to talk about, and this is like video game adjacent, is I started playing a board game called The Sleeping Gods, and I don't think I've mentioned it on air or not, but I thought I would bring it up. It's a board game from Ryan Lockett, I believe is how you pronounce his name. He's made a lot of other board games, like Above and Below, I think Near and Far is another one. But he's a board game designer who does the artwork as well and does the board game design, so he kind of does the entire thing himself. I've played Above and Below before and thought it was a pretty good game. It's a really good like entry board game as well. Like, it's fun for people who aren't into playing board games as much. And part of what interests me in Sleeping Gods is that it's kind of it has a similar mechanic as Above and Below. Just to give you a premise of what the game is, you're playing as like a crew of a ship, and you get caught in a storm, and then you come out the other side, and you're in a world that is kind of alien or doesn't make sense. You're transported somewhere that's, like, not Earth, but there's still, like, humans and weird races, like, running around everywhere. And the idea is there's a concept of the sleeping gods, which are on this planet that are eventually gonna, like, they, when they're awake, they destroy, like, everyone, and you're trying to figure out how to wake them up to go back home or to kill them, or it's not clear. The main mechanic of the game is you have a map of, like, where all the areas are, and on each of the maps there's, like, a bunch of islands, and they all have points of interest, and when you explore a point of interest, there's a giant book that comes with it that you open up. It'll give you some sort of situation, and you usually have, like, an A-B choice, where it's like, oh, there's an old man fishing, and he asks for help. Like, do you help him, or do you rob him, or something like that? And you might have, like, checks for doing that. Like, it might be a strength check to rob him, and it might be, like, a cunning check to help him fish, or something like that. Each of your crewmates have different skills. There's, like, five different skills you can have. There's ways to upgrade them, give them new abilities, that sort of thing. So it's one of those things, kind of like Gloomhaven, where it's technically a board game, but you could easily make this into a video game, and it would be, like, as enjoyable. And the leveling up mechanics are kind of, like, so dense that, like, it's almost to the point where it's like, yeah, this almost would function better as a video game, since it would just handle all the complications for you.
It sounds like it's kind of, like, leaning slightly toward being a like a tabletop, like a storytelling tabletop kind of deal, and also It has, like, one foot a little bit over the line into, like, this is a board game version of, like, Sunless Seas, right, or Sunless Skies.
Yeah, sure. It leans into more of, like, the fun adventure type theme, but there are definitely, like, you know, things that you fight and, like, weird, like, monsters and creatures of the sea and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. So you can play this with up to four players. This is one of the first games I'm actually doing a solo run through of it. And that kind of basically all it changes is what characters you have control of. So I imagine it'd be a little bit harder with more players, because you kind of are fragmented with which people you have. And so the skill set is then fragmented, where it's like, now, you know, it's on my turn, I can do any check since I have, like, all characters. So I have, you know, the character who's really good at strength and the character that's really good at fixing the ship or whatever. But if it were, like, a four-player game, your choices would be a lot more limited, where it's like, okay, I only have a cunning and fixed person, so I can't even do this, like, strength check on this thing. So I imagine that would slow the game down a lot more, but I don't know. I guess I don't know how much more to go into it outside of that, but I'll just say that so far the writing's really good. It's interesting. And there's, like, a good sense of, like, there's a good game design there as far as, like, being able to, like, start. It's very, like, quest heavy. Like, when you go and explore an area, like, half the time it's like you get more information about another location somewhere on the map that you might want to go to continue on. And the way they kind of handle that is, like, if you like beat something or meet someone or something like that, you get a literal card, like a quest card or an adventure card, and all the quest cards have a keyword on it. It might be like, so for example, with the example I gave before, there might be a card that says, like, fish on it or something, like, if you help the person out to fish. And then, like, later somewhere else in the map, it's like, oh, if you have the keyword fish, then go read this text instead of reading the main branch of text. And then, so, like, that makes for, like, a lot of cool, like, interactions where it's like you go somewhere else on the map and they're like, oh, that was my brother you helped out. That's really awesome. Here's, like, some gold, or here's blah, 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 you know. So there's, like, a really good sense of, like, interconnectedness on the map as well.
Those usually pretty tight, closed loops where, like, oh, you know, this keyword shows up once and has one result and then it doesn't show up again? Or, like, if you have the keyword fish, can you see that show up a couple different places?
I think there's good variance to it. There's certainly ones that are like, hey, go one space over and look at this thing. And then there's things like, hey, go one, like, each map is kind of segmented, like, so you can, you know, like, a given map might be, like, I don't know, like, two rings of, like, eight spaces or something like that you can kind of sail around. But, you know, some of the quests might be like, hey, go to the next map, where you have to, like, go south off the board and go to the next area or something like that. You might need to go there. And some of them are, like, completely opposite of the map, where it's like, oh, I heard something really far up north is like this or whatever. And it's like, well, if I'm in the area, I might look at it, but I'm not going to prioritize that. So it kind of varies all over the place. But there's a good amount of variance there. So, yeah.
Cool.
That sounds great. I mean, and the art is gorgeous. I just flipping through it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. It's definitely a unique board game. I haven't played anything quite like this before. So yeah, I was kind of impressed by it. So
nice. Sleeping Gods. Mm. Yeah. I'll do mine. I have two quick ones. So, you know, I've been dabbling in VR for a while, and I've not really brought it up on here. Generally, just kind of my thought was it's either like really niche, or it might be, you know, kind of exclusive. Like, you know, people are just like, why would they want to hear about something that they are not equipped to play? And I put out a call like, hey, do you want to hear about this stuff on you know, on shows? Like, are you interested? And people said yeah. So I'm gonna give this a shot here. Over Christmas. The gift that I just, you know, I like to save my family trouble. They're just like, hey, don't get me a bunch of stuff. Just all go together on this. I got a Quest 2, to replace my Quest 1, for, the primary reason being like the Air Link, like being able to, stream off of a, you know, Steam PC to do Steam VR without being plugged in is a real huge deal. And the Quest 2 is the one that does that natively without doing like sideloading kind of stuff. Also, Quest 2 does Resident Evil 4 VR, and that's something I wanted to play. Sweet. I'm not quite ready to talk about Resident Evil 4 VR just yet. instead, I've got two. I've got a Souls-like, actually, to talk about, a VR Souls-like. This is called In Death, and then the subtitle is Unchained, I believe it is.
Because of course it is.
Yes, because you got to have it, which is funny because there is another Souls-like called Immortal Unchained. These are not related products. This one, the story is kind of some nonsense. Like, you are this soldier who is kind of conscripted for the forces of the afterlife to go and kill evil stuff that is taking root in purgatory. The idea on this being that it is roguelike, and you're going through like the first biome is, you know, like castle, cathedral kind of stuff. It's pretty abstract. It's like floating in the air, and you're fighting monks, and you're fighting knights and zombies, like abomination kind of things. But like the thing that makes this really interesting is that everything is handled through archery. Okay. So you're not doing like sword and shield kind of stuff. You are using the, you know, motion controllers to aim, draw back, and then release and fire bows and arrows. And when I say
everything, which is the best thing you can do in VR,
it is absolutely the most satisfying action that you can take in VR. It's, you know, super goofy. Everything about VR is super goofy. The quicker you can get over the awkwardness of it, I think the more fun you are going to have. But like, even movement is handled in archery. You fire warp arrows, and you warp to wherever you go to. So like, your maneuverability and just like positioning, it all comes down to how accurate can you be with the bow and arrow built into this, right? And this is in addition to your regular damaging arrows, and then you can pick up you can get like elemental arrows that do different things. And so, you know, you end up needing to make really tricky shots. You end up needing, as enemies get real close to you, you end up needing to fire off like really quick shots to deal with them, because you might not be able to do the warp in time. There is weirdly a dodge mechanic that is not just you move your body to get out of the way of the thing that's coming to get you. You can, you can step out of the way. It's like you use a little squeeze button on your right controller, and then you throw a little like movement shard. So it's like, oh, you throw this crystal and it warps you over to that. That is a way to do like a quick little dodge. In addition to, you can pull up like a buckler, absorb, arrows, or to, you know, knock away a knight who has gotten close. It's really difficult. It's very hard. I've not, gotten through like the first level. But in addition to that, there is very strong like meta progress, that you can make, you know, is kind of keeping track on everything, you know, how many things you kill. You're unlocking new things that can spawn in. So like, I just unlocked a crossbow. I haven't used it yet, but I imagine it will be substantially different than just doing the regular, you know, manual bow and arrow, right? I assume there are going to be trade-offs. Like, you unlock like different like amulets that you can pick up and equip.
For all, are you guys team crossbow or team bow and arrow? Like, given the choice.
In VR specifically or in general?
In general, we'll say.
I mean, I don't know. Probably standard bow and arrow for me.
I mean, you can dual akimbo crossbows, so I think that answers the question for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it depends on the era. Generally speaking, bow, but the push lever crossbows are really badass.
Yeah, you end up, if you get like one of those, like if it's today, and if I in a survival scenario, first off, I would die immediately. Second off, I'd be going for the Daryl from The Walking Dead, you know, crossbow, just like everybody would. I wouldn't want to use a medieval crossbow where you have to like gotta like crank it or whatever. That would suck.
Sure. Yeah, just like a slab of wood and a string, and hope you can pull 500 pounds.
Yeah, and hope that it holds together and that the tension doesn't make it snap and then it just fucking kills you. Just, oh yeah, it says, you know, he was blinded. Oh, by an enemy? No, just his thing broke, mm-hmm. and now he's dead, mm-hmm. and blind.
It's friendly fire, but worse.
Yeah, yeah.
Auto fire, but not in the way you think.
Yeah. So even though death comes quick, go ahead.
Yeah. I'm watching trailers for it, and I don't see any kind of reticle or way to tell exactly where you're aiming. And I can't tell if that's just, hey, it's VR, learn to shoot a bow and arrow, or if it's taken off for trailers. So is there any kind of pointer?
There's no indication. There is not. Yeah. So like, it's one of those things where like, as I have gone in and played this, and I probably haven't played this for more than like 4 or 5 hours, you know, I've mm-hmm. probably done, you know, 20 minute sessions every day, or, you know, for a few days here and there, you know. And yeah, like, you do end up making dumb mistakes, but I have felt myself getting better at the VR version, at this particular game's version of, you know, knowing where this is going to go. And it's really satisfying to, you know, say like, okay, there's this guy really far away. I wonder if I can nail him, if I can get a headshot. When you do it, it's super satisfying to, you know, to get it.
Very cool.
Yeah, so I'm just like working on getting better at the accuracy and getting better at not being surrounded. Whenever I've died, it is because I've gotten surrounded, you know. So it's weird to say that in a game where you can teleport, but you do end up getting pretty overwhelmed. And, you know, the game does kind of make you split time between these, you know, open areas where you have a good kind of overview of a place, and kind of into these corridors where, mm-hmm. you know, oftentimes, you know, you just stuff will get you on your blind side, you know.
So yeah, I have a question about like, how long can you play in a sitting for this game? Like, is there any like sickness or anything inducing like at any point, or is it like, can you play like a good 2 or 3 hours and then you kind of need to take a break, or what?
I am super susceptible to motion sickness. I could get motion sickness staring at a painting in a museum, you know? Mm. For me, it is more about comfort of having the thing on my face. Like sometimes it gets hot. Oh, I also ordered prescription lenses for my VR headset to actually like fix in, so I don't have to wear my glasses under it. So it'll be nice. More comfortable, you know.
That's cool. Yeah. That's available.
It's kind of neat. They'll be here in a little bit, so I'll report back on that. There is no motion sickness. It's kind of the difference. Like you can be somebody who gets car sick, but you don't get sick when you're driving the car, you know.
Yeah.
Or if you're looking forward, it's just a matter of there are all kinds of different motions, all different kinds of motion sickness, and being in control generally makes it better for all of them. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, this game looks awesome. I'm sad it's not on PSVR.
I was unsure. It's one of those ones. I know, like the edition that I'm playing, like the Unchained and the expansion, is Quest exclusive, but I didn't know the base version was not. Who knows? Maybe they'll do it with the PSVR too.
Yeah, I'm really crossing my fingers that becomes the standard, just because it's such a beefy thing, but the Quest 2 seems like where it's at right now, so I'm excited to hear more from you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the other one that I've been playing, at least enough to feel like I can comment on it, is Pistol Whip. Has anybody heard about Pistol Whip?
No.
I have heard about it. I have never played it.
Okay. So Pistol Whip, it is a kind of a combination. I wrote down Pistol Whist. Which is very funny.
Oh, no.
Because that's an old it's an old card game.
So, interesting.
Just yeah. No, it's just as I was writing down what game I had played. Yeah, or what game I was talking about rather. No, Pistol Whip. So this is a combination like rail shooter / rhythm game. And it continues the trend of VR games being of VR being the platform for very fun rhythm. Very fun rhythm games with music I would never in my life listen to intentionally.
Ouch.
It's just a bunch of like EDM, you know, nonsense with like drops and, you know, digital stuff. It's not.
All right, but are you going to play pretend John Wick to Aukerville River? Like,
no, no. But it's there's a line, right? I could see doing this to some really rhythmic rock kind of stuff.
Sure, that makes sense.
It's ultimately fine, you know, because I'm not necessarily here for the music. Like, this is just a really fun. It's a really fun rail shooter that happens to have a rhythm component. So the idea is, you know, you're in this really stylized, you know, virtual world. Each of the scenarios, like levels that you do, is like fashioned after a fake movie. This is outside of like the campaign mode that you can do that has like a little story to it. But like, here's the, you know, there's the zombie one. Here's the, you know, you're running through like the train depot shooting things. But your character, you are automatically moving down a line, and in rhythm and in time to the music. Enemies will pop out and take aim at you, and you have to either shoot them or shoot them and then dodge their bullets, or dodge their bullets and then shoot them, you know, and while you're doing that, also like dodge obstacles that you are moving towards. You get extra points, and your scoring is handled based on how close you are to the beat when you shoot them. And so you really want to be in tune with the beat of the music, because not only because it will, you know, score you better, but like if you are grooving with the track, as the kids say, it helps you kind of anticipate like, all right, yeah, I took care of this guy, but like this phrase has repeated before and there's been like, you know, one, two, and then I, you know, that helps me predict like where somebody's going to come from next. So when you get real in sync with it, you end up being able to see a couple of beats ahead. If that makes any sense. Nice. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Music's got phrasing, and that phrasing translates into what enemies are coming. That's what makes you feel like you're kind of a step ahead of everyone. You got your own bullet time going on.
Yeah. There's really generous. I'm playing it on easy just because, you know, it's a pretty difficult game. You know, when you get hit by a bullet, it takes away your shield, and if you get hit by another one, then you die. you have to shoot somebody in order to get your shield back, you know. So I'm playing it on easy, and the aim assist is notable. But I think that it is important at the very least, as you're getting into it and getting used to it, that the aim assist is pretty, you know, is pretty overbearing, or at least, you know, noticeable, because you want to be able to fire off at the hip as enemies come out, and as you're, you know, pretty kind of getting aware of them, you know, just very reflexively, I need to be able to fire this off without looking down the iron sights. You know, like, I need to be able to do this. There are different modes. Like, there is like it's actually called John Wick mode, where the enemies don't actually shoot at you. You just have to shoot them in time with the with the music as they pop out. But there is no aim assist, and it's really tough. So you get a good appreciation for how much assistance is kind of coming your way. I don't want to go on for too long about this, but the thing that I've been noticing is, like, the most physically demanding part of it is dodging the bullets. You know, so you'll get like a little flash on your it's hard to call it the screen, but like the interface will show a flash, like, hey, an enemy's got a sight on you, can kind of see roughly the line that it's coming down, that the bullet's going to come down. The bullets move relatively slowly, but you have to move pretty dramatically to get out of the way of them. And so I've never done any kind of exercise that is like this, where it is jerky random pivots of your entire upper body at the waist. You know, it ends up being
dodging in boxing or something.
Kinda, yeah. And so, like, I had a few sessions of this, you know, and then I woke up like in the middle of the night one night thinking, like, why the fuck are my quads hurting? Or just the top of my legs? And I realized, oh, it's because I've been doing fucking Neo moves. It's because I've been it's literally my stabilizer muscles that have been getting a workout by doing this. You know, it's somebody who's more active than me probably wouldn't notice the burn as much. But it's like, wow, that's kind of strange. I didn't feel like it that this game tricked me into doing that kind of strenuous activity. So kudos on that, I guess.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And those muscles always complain the loudest. It's always the quiet kid at the back of the class that never really speaks up that always explodes.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, like, learning how to dodge, you know, not over dodge is pretty important as well, because you want to get back upright so you can fire off your next shot. You know, if you're standing over here and you're doing like a big lunge, you're not going to be in position to shoot the next guy before he shoots you. So you can kind of get on tilt and behind the behind the curve of what the game is asking
get
for
tilted.
you want to economize your movements. So that is something that I'm noticing in general, is that specifically with In Death and with Pistol Whip, the element of physical execution of what the game is demanding is definitely a thing, more so than it is in regular video games, and I am feeling myself getting better at them, and that is an interesting way to rise to meet a game's challenge.
So what you're saying is you've been bobbing and weaving?
Yes, quite literally. Yeah.
Wow.
Quite literally. So yeah, these are neat. I've been really enjoying them. They've kind of been my go-tos if I've had like a, you know, less than a half an hour of time to sit down and play something. Like, if I couldn't, you know, make progress in a piece of homework. Do you guys have any questions about Pistol Whip?
I have a question. How does the Quest 2 compare to the Quest 1?
So it is way lighter. It's remarkable, and I probably wouldn't have noticed this if I didn't have both of them at the same time. I'm still trying to figure out something to do with the other one. It is like lower profile and lighter, so it is way more comfortable. It feels and looks higher resolution and more responsive. There was a certain amount of I don't know how to describe it, like banding or like weird like lensing effects going on in the Quest, like the original Quest. It just feels like the optics are a little bit better in the Quest 2. So they simultaneously made it smaller and lighter, but also like look and feel better, I guess.
It's so weird to have a console's improvements allow you to play for longer for physical reasons. Like the comfort is so important to that.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where like the weight of the original Quest, it felt kind of like the PSVR. It didn't bother me that much because I wasn't sitting down to play it for more than a half an hour at a time anyway, you know. But it does make a difference. The lightness and the fact that it is not extending as far off of your face, and therefore like exerting as much like cantilevered leverage on your neck.
Yeah. You want to talk about muscles that get sore and complain a lot. Those are definitely violators.
Yeah, that'll be like long-term damage too. You want to take care of your neck. Yeah. Cool. That's all I got.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what's the question you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I mean, David alluded to this when talking about Extraction. But I've got these kind of weird offshoots on the brain. So you've been tapped to give a favorite franchise the Blood Dragon treatment. That is, you make a non-canon entry that plays with the tone, setting, etc. in any way you want, while keeping some of the core DNA intact. What franchise do you choose, and how do you drive it completely off the rails?
Yeah, and I will go in here and start with Greg, who says, I would have said make a first-person hack and slash for a Final Fantasy game, but it looks like they are doing that. So I'm going to go with a 4X space strategy game idea, which is set in the lore of Gradius, but has a lot of Master of Orion. You have to explore and colonize a new area of space while the enemy is doing the same. Greater resources, research tech, and then build up, gather resources, research tech, and then build up and upgrade the Vic Viper, and then take it into combat in the behind the ship POV shooter stages, close to the gummy ship stages in Kingdom Hearts. I'd play the hell out of something like that. Well, you practically wrote the design doc there.
Yeah. So when are you getting started on it? That's my question.
I've not paid attention to like a greater lore of the Gradius universe, so I'd be curious. Let's see, Ben, what does Eli say?
Eli says Dark Souls, but in some kind of Final Fantasy 8 or 7 setting, or maybe Metro 2033, but in a Spencer mansion. Final answer, modern Hitman set in the various levels from Bioshock 1 and 2 on the night of the revolution. That sounds good.
I want the last one. Yeah.
Yes, that is an excellent answer.
You found a winner.
And that works both for Hitman and for Bioshock.
Yeah.
So I'm actually surprised they've never made a Hitman game that I've seen that's been set during some sort of like disaster or something.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe there's some like level variants that I haven't seen on some of the maps. Those get a little weird, but
that's because Hitman is the disaster.
As this is, there's one where it's an opera where a disaster kills a person, so it's kind of set in that.
David, what does Andrew say?
Andrew says, I've always wanted to play a Pokemon game that lets you play as Team Rocket. Even better, let you found an organization and go from it being a few people to eventually taking over a whole region. It wouldn't have to only be that either. A game that gave you more freedom to do what you want or be who you want. Like in Skyrim, how you can become an archmage or a werewolf, or the leader of the Thieves Guild. I've got these super powerful monsters under my control. Just let me play a game that makes me feel that power.
Yeah. On the other side of that, give me like a job simulator, but you know, I'm ordering a Machamp around to like destroy buildings and stuff, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like all these, like that's always depicted in Pokemon games, but you never get to do that.
Yeah.
So I feel like this is, you know, I'm in a fantasy world, but I'm, you know, I'm playing as a, you know, organized crime member. I feel like I want to see the inverse of that, a Yakuza game where you actually do crime.
Oh, yeah. And you're not just doing wholesome dad stuff for your neighborhood. Yeah. Wholesome dad stuff, like throwing a bike at a man.
A man who deserved it.
He did approach you on the street, so. Dennis, what does Gwillem say?
Gwillem says, Wolfenstein, Blake Stone. Basically a remake of Blake Stone with the gameplay and cast from the Wolfenstein reboot. So the exact same ensemble, just transported to the matinee sci-fi universe of Blake Stone. And dealing with dark science monsters instead of, well, also dark science monsters. Different range of dark science monsters there. Just to spell out the joke, the original Blake Stone was a Wolf 3D reskin. Similarly, if Heretic got resurrected, I'd love if it was at its core a reskin of the Doom reboot. It could branch out from there, but I think its origins of being the same basic game with different art should be leaned into rather than away from. I would also accept the new Wolfenstein cast doing a remake of Super 3D Noah's Ark. Yes, please. Youngblood proved that Blackowitz can rock a big white beard, so he's pretty much there already. Plus, he's murdered so many video game animals over the years that building and running an ark is probably the only way he can ever truly redress the balance. Bonus suggestion, Mario Kart Horizon.
Yeah.
Oh.
let me go around the entire Mushroom Kingdom. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Suggestion to your suggestion. Oh, go ahead.
I thought Mario Kart Horizon was like Horizon Zero Dawn as Mario Kart, yeah. Like riding around on robot raptors.
I was about to make that joke.
just a Mecha Yoshi, yeah.
I mean, that'd be amazing.
Yeah. Let's see. Austin says Bulletstorm. Basically keep the same game, but take out all the attempts to be the new Duke Nukem game. Give me all those insane bullet physics along with that sweet whip with less angry sex jokes. So you want to de-blood dragon it.
Yeah.
You know, make it less over the top. That is an aspect of Bulletstorm that has not aged very well. I love how everything has scored in that, though. Huh. Let's see, Ben, what does Moonborn say?
Moonborn says, basic answer, Bloodborne, literally just given the same treatment as Blood Dragon, which is a confusing sentence with all the blood. Bloodborne with 80s aesthetic and kick-ass synth music, please.
Yeah.
Sure.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's got to be some kind of punk, right?
Yeah, some...
Blood Dragon.
Somebody
punk?
Who knows more.
Blood Punk.
Blood Punk.
I'm positive Blood Punk exists.
Oh, for sure. I'm afraid to Google it, but I know it's out there.
David, what does Adam say?
Adam says Disco Elysium spinoff that stars Adam West Batman.
That is weirdly close to my answer. So. And then rounding us out here, Dennis, what does Tyler say?
Tyler says, Need for Speed Off-Road Fury 2, but every single playable car is replaced with RVs driven by grandparents. And in between dodging cops, you have to take frequent rest stop breaks.
Yeah.
Get off my road.
Mine would be Disco Elysium, but it would be an open world cop game. Where you play as the sergeants Mac the Torso Torson and Chester McLean. So when they were making Disco Elysium, one of their ideas was to make it kind of like a more standard buddy cop action kind of deal. Again, starring Mac the Torso Torson and Chester McLean. But as they developed Disco Elysium into the game that it is, those characters got relegated to the side, and now you just hear about their like wild loose cannon adventures. you know, like secondarily, or like if you have the, if your skill of like, you know, cop senses up real high, like you can just feel them doing something real sweet a couple of districts over. So just playing as those two loose cannons getting results, you know, elsewhere in Martinez, you know, or shit, maybe even a Revachol, who knows. That's what I would want. Yeah. Ben, how about you?
Take GTA Vice City and turn it into a cyberpunk game. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Oh man.
David.
So I'm going to cheat and go with two. I think the first one would be Bloodborne, except Weird West. So, you know, lots of vampire cowboys and, you know, having to right the wrongs against, you know, I don't know, science robot cows or something. I don't know.
Of course.
And, the other one would be, taking, Shadow of War, and basically Shadow of War with less slavery.
Yeah, it's kind of built right into the beginning of it, huh?
I'm a little bit being snarky about like that, but legitimately it does kind of hurt the game, because once it switches to, you know, actually being this kind of building up an army thing, the orcs very much just want to like cut loose and like do, you know, build a badass army and do crazy stuff, and mm-hmm. your character is just a complete ass to them at the whole time. Yeah, so like a character mm-hmm. where a game where your character was actually free to like the people under your command would probably be a lot more fun.
Shadow of emotional intelligence.
Shadow of good leadership. Yeah. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. This is on the brain because my kids are listening/reading the Percy Jackson books right now. But there's so many different remakes and takes on the kind of traditional pantheon of Greek mythology that I would love to see Hades do a version with just like modern updates to all of the characters. So, I mean, you know, they're all pretty modern in a progressive sense already. Mm-hmm. But just have them like, I want to see Hades in just some sneakers on those cool hot feet. Or, you know, see Hades in a business suit.
Yeah.
I think that would be fun.
I was thinking of the idea of in Cyberpunk there's no gods, so it would just be an empty game.
Oh no. Nice. Good question. Thank you for posting that, Dennis. Mm-hmm. If you're listening and you would like to participate, you can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. And thank you, folks, for responding.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. Dennis, what's going on with that Uncharted movie?
Yeah, a movie that I started out very cynical about has progressively just won me over, and I'm starting to get really excited for it. So the latest thing is for a trailer, they just did a little behind-the-scenes stunts thing where they showed how insane and acrobatic a lot of the aerial stunts were. You know, obviously there's heavy CGI, and a lot of this is done in a studio with blue padded stuff everywhere. But to see Tom Holland hoisted up on wires and spinning around crazy and getting knocked by giant foam blocks is kind of fun. It makes me very excited for the movie. Of note, he says that the stunt work he did on Uncharted is the most intense that he's done. And hearing that from Spider-Man is interesting.
I was going to say.
Yeah, I am getting hyped for this movie.
Nice. If you didn't point that out, then I would as well. Mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. It's weird to have Spider-Man.
I mean, they're getting their mileage out of him being Spider-Man.
Using up all his cartilage. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
David, what is Pal World?
So Power World is very appropriate to our multiplayer.
Okay.
It is basically a idyllic Pokemon game until you notice that both you and all of the Pokemon have lots and lots of guns.
Okay.
Pokemon gotta defend themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the trailer kind of implies, it shows also a world in which, like, oppressed Pokemon are forced to work long hours on assembly lines constructing weapons and stuff like that. So you appear to be, liberating the Pokemon against their oppressors.
Okay.
But, I don't know, just Pokemon with guns.
Nice.
Who's the developer? Pocket Pair. I've never heard of them before. Like this looks fairly high production value. At least the animation style is really nice.
Yeah.
I've just never heard of the developer. But this sounds really really kind of cool.
Yeah. I had never heard of that before. Huh. Oh, dude, you're laughing at the Onion Link, the nobody yep. panic, Bulbasaur found a gun. just his face and a big smile, like,
bah. Oh, man.
Ben, what is Respawn making too many of?
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Respawn's making three new Star Wars games, not just one, not just two, but three. So this was released recently. I guess it was already known they were working on a sequel to Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, called Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order 2. But they're also making two
another subtitle, right?
It should, yeah, right. There needs to be another colon
Star Wars
after Fallen
Jedi
Order.
Fallen Order 2
colon
Unleashed.
2
or no, Unchained.
Yeah. But they have two other games in development. They have a first-person shooter Star Wars game in the works. The game director on it is somebody who oversaw development on God of War 3 and Star Wars and then I think also The Force Unleashed. So that sounds like a cursed game. But who knows? Maybe not. All right, sorry, no, I'm mixing that up. Sorry. The God of War 3 person is doing Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order 2. The Force Unleashed person is doing the first-person shooter, otherwise known as a probably cursed Star Wars game. and then the third game, which sounds most interesting to me, is going to be a strategy game. It's being developed not by the XCOM game designers, but by the people who did the XCOM art director. So not as exciting as the headline makes you seem. Okay. So that could be cool, though, having a Star Wars strategy game. I know it's been tried, I think, in the past, once.
Yeah, they've had a few. Star Wars Empire War is pretty good.
Where you
commanding squadrons and, walkers and stuff. Like, that was a fun game, but it's old. It's old as the hills. Yeah.
I played the hell out of Star Wars Battlegrounds back in the day.
Yeah.
Not Battlefront, but Battlegrounds.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I think the takeaway here is video games like TV shows, they're just throwing paint at the wall or throwing stuff at the wall and just seeing what sticks.
You
like to play Splatoon?
Only if it's a Star Wars Splatoon. You have red and green paint.
There's your reskin.
Yeah.
if past is precedent, two of these three will be canceled and then the third will be delayed a long time.
Yeah, it's like baby turtles.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, you have more of them knowing that some gulls are going to get a few. So
Yeah,
that seems to be the way of things now.
The thing that I saw, the reaction was, oh, so we have Respawn working on three games that are not Titanfall 3. Cool. Okay, good.
Yeah. I mean, this is the approach they've taken with Star Wars video content as well, given all the shows they're pumping out there to less and less quality. So why not in video games, too?
Why not?
I thought we had all decided that Titanfall 3 is never happening.
I don't know about decided. I didn't agree to that.
Yeah. It was decided for us.
Yeah, like, I thought once you play Apex Legends, like, wasn't that in the terms of service?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe, I don't know.
I will stop bitching about Titanfall 3.
I've never played it. I've never played Apex Legends, so therefore I can say, God, I just want a 7-hour first-person shooter like Titanfall 2 was. It was very good and fun, and it was over. This is more of just kind of a heads up. It's not something I'm really excited about, which is a bit of a problem because, you know, going against the remit. But I'm just warning people that knockoffs are on the rise. Not only are Wordle knockoffs popping up and being kicked down just as quickly, but also somebody took one of my favorite games from last year, Unpacking, and just straight up cloned it and put it out on the Apple App Store. So I believe it also popped up on Android as well, or on the Google Play. And it was knocked down, which is good, but that sucks. It sucks that people did this. So if you're going and looking for these games, be they unpack something, you know, relatively modest like Unpacking, or something that is a wide sensation like Wordle, I would say be sure that it's authentic before you hand over any money, because it may literally just be somebody doing like a weird asset flip trying to scam you.
And the thing that gets me is it's not just throwing it out there, but it is they advertised it.
Yes. It was advertised all over Instagram and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that it can get so far, like,
yeah.
I guess when all the algorithms are doing the approving, that this can happen, but
yeah, yikes. No, it's not a human. We've built this society. We didn't build it. The profit motive built the society, and we all have to live in it.
So I was thinking about that, but it's like, even if a person reviewed it, if they don't have context for Unpacking the game, they might not know that this is like a direct ripoff, right?
Yeah,
that's fair. Yeah,
and, you know, and
well, do they get money from stopping ripoffs?
I don't think they do. I think that they save reputation by responding quickly and pulling this down. You know,
yeah, I think it's more of a long term win.
Yeah. You know, just one of those spiritual things.
Can we side talk about Wordle real quick?
Yeah, sure.
No, not allowed.
I'm a little bit indignant about it because this is just Mastermind, right? The game from like the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, it's just Mastermind, but it is everybody gets the same word, and so you can like talk about it obliquely. To me, the metagame is, you know, talking about, commenting on your process of solving, like if this was a particularly difficult one, without actually saying what the word is, and people who played it knowing. The bad part is that it happens out in public, so it ends up showing up if you don't want to see it, you know.
It's network affects the game.
Yeah. No, I called it the process of playing it is really similar to the hacking in the 3D Fallout games, right?
Yeah.
Which is also Mastermind.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's my story. Play Unpacking. It's really good. It's on Game Pass, and it's one of the sweet, it's a very sweet game that has a lot of love and craftsmanship that's gone into it, and it's not very long.
Play Unpacking, get it from the source.
Yes. Yeah. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the level number 401. I'm trying to think of admin stuff. All I can think to say is be prepared for, I'm not going to be doing an episode probably the Tuesday after Elden Ring comes out. We're probably going to be head down on that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just anticipate that in the schedule as it's coming up. But otherwise, you know, all the stuff you can do to help us out. I love how Greta knows my I'm wrapping up the show patter, because she immediately whenever it happens, she walks in and starts doing ankle time. Getting into lobbying for treats. But iTunes ratings and reviews, telling your friends, Facebook to participate in the multiplayer, and Patreon, all of that is good stuff. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Give Greta treats, I guess.
she'll get treats. Don't worry. She'll remind me. I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Twitter at Deck of Wonders with underscores.
I've been David Mysmith. You will soon be able to find me asleep.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some tiles. Okay, I have two. I have Actually Bobbing and Weaving, and I have Hot Hot Feet.
So I had a bunch of them this time around. I had Other, except it's spelled O-A-E-T-H-E-R.
Okay. I would be able to do the ligature in the Unicode, but yeah.
True. I have A Bad Day for Networks.
Okay.
Dark Side Souls. A Confusing Sentence with All the Blood. Just Unchained.
Okay.
And Doing Ankle Time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what I call it when Greta gets in. It does ankle time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ben, what you got?
I have nothing.
Attaboy. And Dennis.
Yeah, I got four. I've got oddly different. Everyone's had different titles. The first one is The Discourse Cycle.
Okay.
Second one is Pistol Whist.
Okay.
next is Wholesome Dad Stuff. Okay. And then finally, Yoshi Mecha.
By laughs, it has to be a confusing sentence with all the blood.
Yes, I like that one a lot.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Cool. Well, thanks, you guys. I hope that this new recording worked out well for you. I'll report back next time before we start recording if we're going to go back to Discord or if we're going to use this. Thanks for being adaptable.
Yeah, I hope it goes well for you as well.
Cool.